Well, thank you, and good morning, everyone. Thanks for tuning in to Cato's second quarter 2011 results conference call. We're pretty excited to be here. We had a great quarter, so we're happy to come and talk a little bit about it. With me in the room today, we've got our COO, Scott Robinson, our CFO, Kathy Turgeon, our VP of Exploration, Dave Thomas, and VP of Land, Glenn Booth. And as always, our Investor Relations rep, Jim Grant, is here with a whole list of questions I see, Jim, so why don't I fire it over to you.
Okay, for those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, for the seventh quarter in a row, we are reporting a production increase and indicated that we've already seen daily production numbers that met our exit target for 2011. And we did that despite the impacts of a late, muddy, and rainy spring breakup season. What do you attribute this to?
I attribute it to we under-promise and over-deliver. No, you know, seriously, Jim, the fact that we've been able to double the company's production over the last 2 years using less than our cash flow, I think, it's a real testament to the ability of this Peyto team to execute on its ideas and on the opportunities that we have here at Peyto. You know, because I look out at the industry and there are a lot of companies that, you know, they have deep basin lands, they have, and they're all talking about the opportunities that they have, and everybody has access to this new technology, but I have yet to see one that has gone out and delivered on the results that we have. So, you know, the only thing I have come to the conclusion of is there must be the Peyto team, and it's the people here, and it's the strategy that we so successfully deploy that must set us apart from a lot of others.
Well, our second quarter news release speaks about capital efficiency for our drilling program, and it says that to date this year we're roughly equal to that of last year. Just how do we determine this, and what does it mean in terms of our overall business plan?
Well, Jim, as you know, we have a very strict focus on returns here at Peyto. And so we're constantly trying to monitor our results, which obviously is sometimes hard in the early life of a well when you don't have a lot of production history to base your assessment on. So one of the metrics that we use to try and gauge our results is this capital efficiency term, which is simply just the production that we have built with the capital that we've spent. And, you know, we admit that it's not a good measure of profitability necessarily, but because we consistently build the same kind of asset year in, year out, at basically the same pace, it does give us a bit of a sense of how we're doing. So, for example, in 2011, if you take the capital that we spent to the end of the second quarter, the $173 million, and you divide that by the 11,000 barrels a day of production that we built with it, you get this capital efficiency of 15,700 per flowing barrel. But, you know, it's really only relevant if we compare it at the same point in time and if building production at about the same pace year over year, so that the new production is about the same vintage. And then it's more of an apples-to-apples comparison. Usually we do this comparison at the end of the year, and then it's, you know, done at the end of every calendar year at the exact same time. But if we were to compare Q2 of last year, for instance, to the Q2 end of this year, last year I think we spent about $87 million to this point. At the end of the quarter, we built around 5,000 barrels a day. So we were in and around that 17,000 per flowing barrel, which coincidentally is about the same capital efficiency as we ended the year with. So, you know, maybe you could even extrapolate this Q2 of 15,000 to the end of the year. But we'll see when we get there. You know, all those things, though, I think point us in the direction that we've had a very good year so far, that the results that we're seeing this year are very comparable in terms of returns as well to the results we got last year. So, you know, that's giving us a lot of confidence that in this environment we're generating, you know, really good returns, and there's no reason why we shouldn't be going at our full capacity with the opportunities that we have out in front of us.
Okay. Now I want to address a few questions to Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer. Scott, in our latest report, we talked about the plant capacity increases that has brought our gas processing capacity to 285 million cubic feet per day. How will this meet our needs going forward? Are there further capacity increases planned this year?
Yeah, Jim, the 285 that we're citing is a reflection of a recent Wildhay plant expansion and also captures part of the progress we've made in expanding our Nose Hill plant. So when you take those into consideration, and when you take into consideration that we are processing partner volumes through some of that capacity, we've got about 6,000 barrels of room right now on that 285. So if we held flat at 285 capacity, we could add about 6,000. That takes into account where we're doing our drilling as well. What lies ahead is that we're going to finish this Nose Hill plant expansion shortly here in the next month or so. And that will take us to about 320 million of total owned plant capacity. So the 285 will take another jump up. And that will effectively put us in a position where we can grow production within that facility capacity by about another 11,000 on top of our current 37,000. So it positions us very well to take us through this year and into the early part of next year. And, you know, we'll continue with the rate of our production growth. We're going to have to stay on top of further facility expansions or construction as we move into next year.
And I hope we stay right on top of that and have to. Our news release also speaks of a new project at our biggest processing plant to recover more liquids from our natural gas by refrigerating it further in processing. Can you explain this one in more detail? What does it mean in terms of what we can add to our revenue stream compared to the costs and capital outlay?
Yeah, certainly. I think everyone recognizes there has been a significant spread between gas and liquid hydrocarbon prices, and that provides a real impetus to extract as much intermediate hydrocarbon, such as propane or butane, as is possible from the gas into a liquid form. Those molecules, propane, butane, sell for about 2.5 to 3.5 times what they're worth when they're left in the gas stream. So there's a real driver to maximize your liquid recovery. Our current processing at our Old Man facility chills our gas to about minus 35 Celsius, which is consistent with typical refrigeration plant processes, and it condenses out, given our combined feed stream to that plant, it condenses out about 20% of our propane and about two-thirds of the butane and almost all of the condensate. So that's where our starting point is. What we're looking at is enhancing this process through the addition of an additional chilling step. So that would be sequential. On the end of our refrigeration process, we would add a supplemental process to take us down to minus 75 Celsius. This is not deep cut. It's not a turbo plant. It's something else. It's a lot cheaper. We found that this is probably the most optimal process to take on. And this will drive our propane recovery up from the 20% level to about 77% of the incoming propane, and essentially we'll recover all of the butane and condensate coming in into the plant. So we'll see a little bit of shrinkage, about 4% shrink in our sales gas, because we're taking some of those molecules into liquid form. We'll see a little bit leaner sales gas, about 3%, but we'll see about a 4 or 5% increase overall in our total calculated BOE. Most importantly, this is a very profitable prospect, as you asked. We're still refining the engineering, but we estimate there's going to be in that $15 to $20 million range to construct. And with the expected incremental revenues based on current spreads of prices, about 1 to 1.5 years of payout time, leaving us in a position where we will be generating about $1 million to $1.5 million of monthly incremental net revenue to us on an ongoing basis. So that has tremendous impact over the life of our long reserve properties that lie ahead.
Mm-hmm. So last year in the summer, we had a fairly major turnaround at our largest processing plant, the Old Man plant in the Sundance area. Do we have any large scheduled maintenance planned this summer? Do any of our plans to increase processing capacity require any lengthy outages of our existing processing capacity?
We did undertake a major turnaround by scope last year. in terms of what we did. But you may recall, through the ingenuity of a lot of our guys, we took what had typically or traditionally been a 2 or 3 day cut down, and it really wasn't that significant last year. We cut it down to 10 hours. So we didn't have much production disruption last year. We did accomplish a lot of work, and that positioned us well for this year. So what have we done this year? We've already undertaken most of our rotating equipment, our compression overhauls, maintenance, and we're in a good position on that equipment right through until 2013. In addition, we're installing extra compressors at a few of our bigger plants to put us in a position where we've got some redundancy, where we can undertake unforeseen maintenance without disruptions for production. So when you add that all together, we don't see much disruption ahead of us here. I will note that we do have a couple of events that are going to occur. We've got to take our old man plant down for a fraction of a day in September for some flare equipment installation, and Nose Hill plant, the finalization of that expansion will involve a very short shutdown for the commissioning of a new refrigeration train there. But nothing that would constitute a significant shutdown. You know, I will point out the fact that we're very fortunate that our production on-stream time is extremely high, probably one of the highest in the industry, and we owe a lot of that to owning our own facilities. We've heard recently about the pains of a lot of other operators who had to experience uncontrollable outages at third-party facilities, particularly the first quarter and spilling into the second quarter of this year. And we've really been able to steer clear of all of that, and I think that's a testament to our strategy of owning our facilities and to staying on top of the maintenance of those facilities.
Mm-hmm. Now I'd like to address a question to our Chief Financial Officer, Kathy Turgeon. Kathy, our royalty costs year over year have not increased as much as our revenues on a percentage basis. Given the current royalty structure, commodity prices, and the rules around the various credits, how long are we likely to enjoy these rates, and do we have to do anything to keep these rates this low?
Well, as you're aware, production that has been added since the new royalty framework was introduced is subject to a 5% royalty rate, and that is a large part of our production right now. That rate extends on average out for about 5 years, and so we should expect to see low royalty rates for the realizable future, given that commodity prices and framework stays the same. In addition, as we add and continue to add new production, those volumes will also be subject to a 5% rate also for about 5 years. So that should keep our royalty rate down for quite the foreseeable future.
Okay. Now I'd like to direct a question to Glenn Booth, our VP of Land. Glenn, as we have proved out our horizontal drilling in several horizons, are we changing our focus on land?
You know, Jim, we really haven't over the 6 years that I've really been here. It's the same strategy, just in sometimes more improved ways. The key from a technical standpoint is to ensure that we capture the oil and gas rates in the Cretaceous. So whether it's down to the Blue Sky Bullhead or down to the Spirit River, that's the challenge. So we're not getting mixed up with the deep rates in the Deep Basin. It's those mid-rights is really where we hunt. But, you know, we're opportunity-driven, always have been, but probably more importantly, remain disciplined in everything we do. And it's going to be technically driven, and it's going to be the economics. And those two elements are superior in everything that we do. Every move that we make, whether it's going to a land sale or going to do a deal, those two things have to line up. And if they don't, we just pass. And we'll be patient to possibly attack that sometime down the road, or we'll go on to something else. But what I'd like to remind everybody is that last year we came off one of our best years from a land acquisition standpoint. We acquired about 100 sections of land. We spent about $12 million. Most of those postings were by our own design, tailored to our drilling activity, our successful horizontal wells. And that has provided us with current activity, obviously for years to come. That's going to get sprinkled in, and I'm sure Dave will talk about that. Those are very cost effective. Again, going back to what I said about the technical and the economics, those rights that we acquired at that time provide us with the maximum returns because we own and operate it. I would not want to be acquiring those rights in this day and age, because we've seen in the Deep Basin that these rights are getting multiple more cost per acre. So, one, we own them, and two, we bought them at the best price. So, again, we're not just going to live off our laurels. We're going to continue to go to landfills, evaluate those, and even deals, but it will be in a measured way.
Okay. Now, I never know which of you, Dave or Glenn, to ask first about things because, one of you decides what land is good, the other one sees what land's available, so I'm not sure which is the cart and which is the horse. But now I'll talk to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration. Dave, how has our success so far this year impacted both our inventory of current drilling opportunities and those we're looking at for next and subsequent years?
Jim, the short answer is that Peyto is adding to our horizontal inventory faster than we're drilling through it. We do this through land sales, land deals, and from confirmation of our ideas gained by drilling. And already we're starting to look at the quality of the locations for 2012, and at this point, I think the mix of opportunities looks just as strong as it has been for 2011. I've previously talked about the success we've had with our initial batch of upper and middle Falher wells, and we have one rig scheduled to drill four more Falher wells in Q3 and Q4. Another rig has been moved to our northern area, and it's scheduled to drill Cardi horizontal locations in our Chime and Smoky areas to the end of Q4. We also plan to test the Blue Sky and Dunvegan formations horizontally before the end of the year and to initiate drilling in two new areas for the Wilrich. So far, the only formation we've had no success in is the Cataman, but we'd like to give that another try in 2012 as there's quite a bit of upside for Peyto there if we can make it work.
Okay. Now back to Scott. With our aggressive capital spending outlook for the remainder of 2011, are we facing any bottlenecks with crews, equipment, or materials?
We don't expect any, Jim. We've got this current five-rig pace going right now. We've been at that for quite a while, and we've got all the services and people in place, and it's working quite nicely. We've got some terrific service providers that are obviously an instrumental part of the success of our business and with whom we have very good relationships. So I think all of that adds up to give us confidence. You know, I suppose susceptible to shortage in frac sand that might occur that we've seen in the past or a shortage in pipe that might occur depending on industry activity. But we position ourselves fairly well in terms of staying ahead of the game and having enough inventory to not put us in any kind of situation of desperation. So the summary answer to your question is no, I don't think we expect any kind of problem in conducting our expanded capital program and carrying that through not only through the rest of this year, but right into next year after breakup. Looks very good.
Mm-hmm. Darren, a question I've seen come up several times in the past few months is the question of funding the rest of this year's capital plan. How flexible are we in terms of being able to execute these plans and continue on at this level of activity going forward?
Thanks, Jim. Yeah, you know, and a very pertinent question considering the market that we've had this week. We get a shockwave through the market like this, and all of a sudden everybody's attention turns from growth and the future to balance sheets and protection. You know, we've never lost sight of the fact that we have to have a bulletproof balance sheet, I think, moving forward, especially if we're going to be countercyclical and aggressive in this type of market. And, you know, we're still a very small and nimble company. There's no question that we can turn on a dime. We can turn off very quickly, and we can turn on very quickly. Obviously, right now, we're on full bore because we're confident in the types of opportunities that we have. But, you know, when we look forward, and even when we look back and see that our cash flow has been growing faster than our debt, that's the thing that gives me confidence in taking on some leverage to have a very aggressive capital program this year. You know, that debt-to-capital ratio, if it's continuing to come down over time, that means, you know, we're getting stronger and stronger from that perspective. And, you know, even though we do have a dividend and we do have a large capital program in front of us, I think our funding options are still quite varied and still very strong there. You know, we didn't on purpose expand our bank lines last spring because we didn't think we were going to need them this year, but I think there was a lot of capacity to potentially do that. We've added to that capacity this year, developing a lot more producing reserves that can be bankable assets that we can use to expand that line. We're getting to the size where we can diversify our debt portfolio a little bit and look at some term debt as well as revolving debt. There is the perception that one-year revolving debt has a bit of risk to it. It's never had any risk for us, but I think we do have some optionality with respect to that. And assuming, I guess, the market stabilized, then on top of all of those funding options, we've still got the markets out there for us. So, I think we've got a very bulletproof balance sheet from my perspective. I think we're as strong as we've ever been with that. From looking at the funding options that we have, we've got obviously a lot of opportunity out in front of us. So I think we're very well situated with the flexibility that we've got to fund this program going forward.
Thank you. As we look forward to 2012 and our developments and our processing infrastructure and our drilling plans, we seem to be continuing along the buy-the-drill-bit organic growth that we've kept for 12 years now. Do you see changes or modifications to this strategy? What are you thinking about Peyto for 6 to 12 months from now?
I think it would be wrong to say that we would never do any acquisitions. I mean, we've done little acquisitions, but even big ones, to just say that we're not going to do them is not right, because we're constantly looking at what's for sale and if we can make a return from it. But the challenge is that, just that. How do we make return from the acquisition? How do you take the acquisition cost and then the subsequent capital for the development of the upside and turn that into a good return? And one that will compete with our organic buy-the-drill-bit type of returns that we're generating. Obviously, if we find one, we're going to be all over it, just like we are with our drilling opportunities. But, I think at the end of the day, we're all about making money, and really we're not too shy, I think, to admit that we're about making money. That's the end game, and there's definitely more than one way to do that. It isn't always achieved through the drill bit. If we can find some acquisitions that are going to do that for us, then we're going to pursue those as aggressively as we have with the drilling. And we're going to keep looking. Just like we keep looking for new drilling ideas, we'll look at all the acquisition opportunities that are available to us that fit with our goal of making money. So from that perspective, I don't see the fundamental strategy at Peyto changing at all for us over the next 6 months or 12 months or 10 years for that matter. I think that's the one reason, if any, that we've been so successful over the last dozen years or so, I think, is that we've never lost sight of that strategy of making money for our shareholders, Jim, as opposed to making money from our shareholders.
Right. Well, at this time, I'd like to turn the call over to questions. So, Catherine, if you could let the participants ask questions now.
Our first question is from Sandy Mehta, from Raleigh Investment Principles. Please go ahead.
Yes, congratulations on the strong results and the strong ongoing production growth. I had two questions. One is based on these strong results, what is the prospect for higher dividends? And how does the board manage and think about dividends in terms of what metrics or how you just go about thinking about it, even if you're not going to say whether you're going to increase dividends, but just you're trying to understand how you are thinking about it or approaching it. And the second question is, could you just update us on what your current reserve life is in terms of years of 2P, 3P assets? Thank you.
Thanks, Andy. With respect to the first question on dividends, I think the long-term goal, obviously, is really not a lot different with respect to a dividend-paying corporation as it was to a trust, in that we're looking to grow the assets that we have that fund those payouts. And so as we gain confidence in the growth of those assets and as we gain confidence in the long-term value of those assets, then we can look to increase those dividends in a permanent way, obviously. So, but at the same time, we have to look too at the market conditions that we're currently in. And one of the things I think the board is keenly aware of is being countercyclical as much as we can be, and taking advantage of our strengths in those countercyclical environments. And so, like we are now in a low gas price environment, where opportunities are prevalent, where we can generate some fantastic returns with the capital that we're putting to work. Obviously, we want to maximize that time period for capital investment. And so, you know, from a funding standpoint, we want to use as much capital as we can to do that. And I think we want to be as aggressive as we can possibly be. So the focus is obviously on generating returns for shareholders with the capital dollar today. But, you know, that isn't always going to be the case. We recognize that, and there will be a time when the dividends will be important, and or more important even than they are today, perhaps. So I think, you know, our long-term goal is still the same, to grow both parallel path, but right now we're more focused on the capital dollar than we are on the dividends. With respect to your second question in terms of reserve life, you know, we can quote you ratios of reserves to production for different categories of reserves, but maybe the more practical way to look at it is the developed portion of our reserves versus the undeveloped portion of our reserves. And so if you looked at that at the end of 2010 and divided the developed portion by our fourth quarter production, you get about 12 years of reserve life index or reserve to production ratio. And if you did it on the undeveloped component of our reserve base, you'd get another 12 years. So we're sitting on 25 years total, both developed and undeveloped resource base. And that only counts, you know, what the independent reserve engineers are recognizing as the reserves we had at the time. And those are pretty high quality, not resources, which many companies are quoting these days, but real reserves. They make economic thresholds, and they have a lot higher confidence levels to them. Obviously, like many other companies in these large resource areas, we have huge resources at our disposal as well. The Deep Basin is chock full of natural gas, and we have a lot of land mineral rights in the Deep Basin. So we haven't even ever bothered to add up all of the resource potential in our land base, really, because the numbers just get too big. And for many, I think they're not a meaningful number. I mean, really, the reserves are the most meaningful number, and already we lead the industry in terms of our long reserve life.
Thank you. Our next question is from Robert Belinsky of Morningstar. Please go ahead.
Hey, everybody. Great quarter. I was just wondering, could you provide some additional details on the new Cardium wells that you drilled in the quarter, and where are they coming in relative to your target economics?
Sure. The Cardium, we have approached the Cardium in a few different areas. One was up in our northern operation, got a very, very good result, but it's still early on that one. The rest of the Cardiums were all down in our Sundance area, and they're coming in very comparable to the averages of what we've seen in the past. The post economics on these wells is somewhere in that 30 to 50% rate of return on a well by well basis. One of the things that we're extremely pleased with these Cardiums is that we're seeing a significant upfront liquid content. Some of these wells are coming in at 100 to 150 barrels of condensate a day in the early months of their production, and that really drives a lot of upfront cash flow and provides us with some excellent return. But they're meeting our expectations. Perhaps in some ways they're exceeding, and the Cardium will continue to be a very meaningful part of our program.
You know, Robert, I would add to that the Cardium, I think historically even for Peyto, has been, technically it's a challenge for completions. There's a lot of stress in the Cardium rock, and so we've developed techniques and fracking techniques in the past to effectively stimulate some of this Cardium. We've ran into some challenges with the horizontal wells as well on the fracking, and, you know, so that's why perhaps we've taken a little more measured approach on the Cardium. We know that the design of our horizontal multi-stage frack wells is going to evolve over time, and we expect to get smarter and even do a better job with them, and so we don't want to rush too quickly through the Cardium without, you know, get too much done with the wrong style of completion, for instance, and then discover that there was an even better style out there. We wanted to make sure that we're learning with every well, so it's definitely a bit more measured pace of the Cardium development than perhaps maybe one of the other formations.
Okay.
Actually, just to supplement that further, we recently rig-released what we regard as an extremely impressive drilling result on a Cardium well here, and haven't finalized the cost, but it looks like it'll come in under $2 million just to drill and equip, not complete that well.
if we can repeat that kind of cost level on our cardiums on an ongoing basis, I think we'll see the economic return on those projects climb from that 40% level to a higher level just by virtue of lower amount of capital requirements. So that's provided some additional encouragement here very recently.
Great. Well, thank you for all the detail there. My other question is, the field operating expense and G&A fell quarter over quarter. Could you guys give any insight into kind of what drove this, and is it likely to continue going forward?
On the operating costs, you know, we're always paying attention to our operating costs. It's critical, and it's the foundation of our success. Our margins are obviously some of the highest by virtue of our cost structure. We don't complicate our lives. We keep our field operations very streamlined. I mentioned maintenance. We keep our equipment running, so we've got good on-stream time. Some of the recent benefits in reduced operating costs simply come out of the fact that we're moving more volume through a fixed amount of cost structure. So we're obviously getting a cost dilution in that respect. But our field guys are doing an excellent job. We're paying very much attention to the chemicals we're using, and that had come down on a proportionate basis based on the volume of gas that we're putting through. You know, we're not running into any other unforeseen costs that maybe some of the other operators are, again, by virtue of us owning our facilities. So we're very pleased. Will they continue to come down? I can't really comment on that. They're pretty low right now. You know, our goal would be to continue to work on them and to try to preserve them at the level that they're at right now. But certainly, I mentioned that we still have some facility capacity to fill up. As we do fill that up, I wouldn't be surprised if the costs do come down a little bit.
You know, G&A, I think, per BOE, is really just a function of the growing volumes faster than we're having to grow staff. You know, we've got a very efficient team. I know it probably blows a lot of people away when they look at the size of Cato in terms of its market cap, its overall production, its capital program, and then we tell people we've only got a little over 30 people at Cato, and that really astounds a lot of people. But you know, the fact of the matter is we focus on very high working interest projects. We focus on the stuff that we own and control, and that just keeps the G&A down in a big way. So, you know, we've been able to do a lot with very few people, but because we're so focused on just what we do and we're not having to chase joint interest partners around for the stuff that we don't control, we're able to get a lot done with very few people and a very low amount of G&A. Really.
Sounds good. Thank you very much, guys.
Thanks, Robert.
We have no more questions at this time. I would now like to return the meeting over to Mr. G.
Well, great. I recognize this is not only a busy week for results coming out, but also a rather roller coaster week from the market's perspective. So people are probably fatigued already. Thanks for listening in, and you know, we're obviously very pleased to bring you this second quarter, but nothing's really changed as we're moving forward. We're really excited about the rest of 2011. We've got a bigger, even bigger capital program now, and we're going to be able to accomplish even more than we originally thought this year. And with the returns and the results that we've been able to post so far, sky's the limit in terms of you know, our abilities moving forward and what we think we can get done. So we're very excited in this market. I know this is a scary market for some, but for us, this is exactly where we like to play. This is the market where Peyto thrives. So we'll be keen to come back to you in the third quarter and tell you all about what happened over the next 3 months or so. So thanks again.